Orlando Magic season outlook tonight on the Dunked On Basketball podcast. Eddie Rivera joining us again from last year. And for some of these, we've had different people on to get a new viewpoint, but I really wanted to have Eddie on because a lot of the things that we saw with Skiles, the Harris trade, his ultimate departure really fit into what some of our talk last year maybe would have predicted, that this wasn't necessarily Rob Hennigan's hire, that Alex Martin's, that ownership was more involved. And then Skiles, it would seem, was instrumental in that big personnel move, moving on from Harris, and then ended up quitting under rather odd, unpredictable circumstances. So when you look at this past year, can you put all this into some perspective for us, Eddie?
Sure. And thanks for having me on again. I really appreciate it.
I guess... I'm not good with the intros. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
I like to just get right to it. I guess this being like the 21st of these, I'm like, all right, you know, I'm not gonna like say who you are or anything. Like, let's just get started. Everybody can read the description of the show. But yeah, so I interrupted you. Please continue.
Yeah, no worries. But to your point, I think overall, I think everyone was certainly surprised by the sudden departure of Scott Skiles leaving after the season was over. I think, you know, to the point about the Harris move, you know, it's interesting when looking back at last season, certainly a lot of things stood out to me, but certainly the Harris trade was one where I was quite puzzled by it. I think certainly people thought that Harris could potentially be the odd man out, given just his inability to really fit into the core of the roster due to his style of play and certainly some of the things that he does on the court that doesn't necessarily mesh with some of the other guys on the roster at the time, like Oladipo, Vucevic, etc. But for him to go and be traded at the deadline for basically nothing, although they did acquire Brandon Jennings and Ersan Ilyasova, the expectation there was that the Magic were going to use that cap space to sign free agents during the offseason, which they ultimately did. But for them to lose him, and certainly with Skiles potentially playing a big part in his departure, according to the rumors out there, but then leaving after the season was over, you kind of just wonder what, you know, the Magic organization was thinking, you know, letting Harris go for little to no return and then having Skiles go and leave himself. To this day, completely boggles my mind as to the thought process behind everything around those two departures, both one with the trade and with Skiles resigning. So I feel like that move definitely defined the season in some respects, to show that I think the Magic were a bit hasty in hiring Skiles, understanding that he was going to try to make things his way. And once he realized that, you know, the team wasn't progressing in his liking, and probably just understanding that it was going to be a long road for him ahead, I think he just realized that maybe this isn't the right fit for me, like I originally thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's too bad that he had to kind of burn things down, knowing that he was leaving. And I think certainly, and that he used his influence, you have to imagine, to affect that trade. And I think that trade is just, it looks disastrous now. I mean, they basically traded him for cap space. They didn't re-sign any of the guys that they got. They did trade Ilyasova in that Ibaka deal, but I don't think anybody is saying that, hey, having Ilyasova enabled us to get Ibaka. And now they got Jeff Green on the roster for essentially the same money as Tobias Harris would have been making. And you know, they signed DJ Augustin as well, which is, you know, an okay-ish contract, maybe at least for this year. But when you just that direct one-to-one comparison, it was a severe miscalculation to think that they could do better than with that $16-17 million than Tobias Harris in free agency this year.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I think that's the real thing that stood out from me after looking at the Harris trade and realizing what the Magic got at the end of the day. I think I was just very frustrated. I'm sure others were, just looking at the roster as a whole, to see them give away Harris, who's still a young player. He does have his flaws, but certainly can still improve. And he did, did some of that improvement under Stan Van Gundy after getting traded to Detroit. And to see a young talent like him go for, again, basically nothing, just speaks to, I guess, short-sightedness from the front office. It's ironic that the Magic gave him away when they essentially fleeced the Bucks to get him in the first place after getting rid of J.J. Redick for a rental. That type of asset management can really cripple a team's rebuild when you miscalculate the way that you got your guys are dealt or signed or what have you. So yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you. I think they just misjudged the whole situation in their entirety, and I think as a result, you know, landing Jeff Green for one year, $15 million deal, he's not going to move the needle, you know. And I think to see that signing happen perplexed certainly everybody, including myself.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it because it's only 1 year, and I don't know really what they could have done better with that money. And I think they acknowledge that. But still, I think I can understand the thinking that Harris didn't fit. He wasn't a great fit, maybe next to Aaron Gordon. If they wanted to try to get someone in like Ibaka, then Gordon was going to have to play the three. And we'll talk about whether we think that's a good idea or not. But at least if they just held on to him in this until the summer, I think they could have at least traded him into some team's cap space and gotten, you know, a first round pick or something. Like to have just, he's a starter on a reasonable contract for the next 3 years, that I think you had some value in, just to get expiring contracts that, you know, didn't even help the team last year either, was really disappointing. And last year they did play better. They even had, I mean, what are they, like 20 and 13 at one point last year?
Yeah, I actually have the numbers for that. So when looking at last season, I look at it in two different seasons, essentially. The first half of the season, they were 19 and 13 by the end of the calendar year. They had a plus 2.3 net rating. They were 14th in offensive efficiency, 10th in defensive efficiency. So they were a good team. I mean, they were playing well. Certainly their schedule allowed them to get to a quick start. They didn't have a difficult schedule back, you know, when I'm looking at it now. But they were a good, solid team. And even if it seemed like they weren't going to, you know, blaze a trail in the Eastern Conference, they at least looked like a roster that was starting to make the progress that a lot of the people thought that the Magic would finally make with the roster that they had built and the talent that they accumulated. And then they cratered in January. They went 2-12 with a negative 0.6, I'm sorry, a negative 10.6 net rating. And then the second half of the year, they went 16-34. And again, just could not defend, could not score. And they just looked lost. And it was, I think, at that point where, you know, again, looking at the reports of Scal's departure, I think he probably saw the writing on the wall that, hey, this team isn't making the progress that I thought we were going to make. You know, I don't know what more I can do here. So, certainly a tale of two seasons, in my opinion, when you look at the numbers.
Yeah, it was interesting. Even when they were doing well, I remember cautioning on the show that, hey, let's not get too excited about these guys because they're doing it with smoke and mirrors. They're not doing it with guys who are centerpieces of this team, other than maybe Evan Fournier, who took a great leap forward last year. And guys who are part of the young core, it was Jason Smith getting really hot on long twos. It was just playing guys who, you know, is the sky. Scal's rotation roulette, which, you know, to his credit, works sometimes, but it really was not something that you looked at as like, oh, this is really growing the long-term future of the franchise. And then, you know, trading away Harris probably didn't help much either, but they really fell off, as you said. So where does this leave them now? I mean, I think when you look at their offseason, it was, they did some things that I thought were really good, and then they did some things that, you know, are kind of head scratchers, leaving you really wondering exactly where this team is now.
Yeah, when looking at some of the new additions, certainly they paid a steep price to acquire Serge Ibaka, giving away Oladipo along with a pick.
What did you think of that trade?
That's a great question. I really think that the Magic paid too steep of a price to acquire Ibaka, though I understand why they did it. Again, I think the Ibaka acquisition is ultimately the culmination of the Magic's inability to find a four to pair with Vucevic. You know, they tried so many different options at the four and never could find someone that could be a fit next to him. And I think the Magic realized that for this roster to improve, and if Vucevic is going to be the guy that you keep at the center position, they needed to solve that problem. So in that respect, I certainly understand why they acquired Ibaka. And let's be frank, I mean, he will step in and solve some of the problems that the Magic have had from a defensive perspective. You know, when you look at last season, he allowed only 43.6% field goal percentage allowed at the rim. To put that number in perspective, Rudy Gobert allowed 41% shooting percentage at the rim. And Gobert certainly seen as one of the leading rim protectors in the NBA. And so when you got a guy like Ibaka that can put up those similar numbers defensively, I think that bodes well for the Magic's hope that he can, you know, pair next next to Vucevic and cover up some of his weaknesses defensively.
Yeah, and he's got some pretty decent mobility. He's used to defending out in the perimeter, defending fours, playing next to a center, and also has some ability to play five as well, though they have Biombo, so you don't know how much we're going to see of that lineup. If it was just Oladipo for Ibaka and they didn't include the 11th pick as well, I might have felt better about that trade. I think that's like pretty close to equal value. You do wonder just in terms of on the court this year and maybe going forward, you do wonder about, all right, what does that say about this team? You're a 35 win team. You're not close to contending for anything. Why are we getting this guy who's 27 and going to be a free agent in a year versus giving up probably still maybe the guy with the highest upside on the roster? Maybe you could say that's Gordon, but I think Oladipo is a little more skilled than him and is still very athletic. So in the long term, I didn't understand. I think at least in the short term, maybe it's about an equal trade. Ibaka is probably better than Oladipo last year. Maybe, with where they are in their careers, that'll begin to equal out a little bit more this year. But you still have Oladipo restricted, obviously, and he's younger, so that would play into it. But then throwing in the number 11 pick as well, I mean, to be honest, it looked like a move to me from an organization that was just, and again, this goes back to some of the unsettlement in the front office and with ownership, where it's like, all right, we are deviating from whatever the plan was here, which was kind of difficult to discern to begin with, and we're going to now go for it this year. But going for it is what, a seed, seventh seed, that's probably what I see as the upside for this team. And it just seemed like kind of a, hey, let's save our jobs kind of move, to be honest.
Yeah, and I would agree there. I think it's been multiple seasons since the Magic have had a winning team. The rebuild is long overdue at this point. I think you can definitely understand, people like Alex Martin's on down saying, hey, listen, we got to win now. We've rebuilt long enough. We got to make some moves that allow us to accelerate this timeline. And certainly the Serge Ibaka is an example of that. And I also agree with you in the sense that it's that pick that tips the scales to me where I felt like they paid too much of a price to acquire Ibaka. I think if it was a clean swap, I would have been fine with it. Even still, understanding the risk of Ibaka certainly walking away, it's unknown. Yeah,
and he said, by the way, Ibaka, that he wants to be in Orlando forever, but that's great. It's probably still going to take a 5-year max offer to get him to stay.
Yeah, exactly. And also, you look at his age. I mean, it's fair to wonder if he's peaked as a player already. Whereas with Oladipo, he's still got room to grow. And as I noted on the podcast last year, I'm extremely high on Oladipo. I really do still think that he can be a 2-way star in this league. And I'm fascinated to see how he pairs up with Westbrook. But I guess we'll see what happens. I like the move in terms of the fact that Ibaka does fill a need. The price I'm leery on, and also just the fact that it was a move designed to win now and rush through this rebuild that certainly has lasted a little bit longer than expected.
Yeah, and you mentioned that part of the reason they acquired him was the fit issues with Vucevic, who is a skilled offensive player to be sure, but not particularly efficient, never gets to the line, and also doesn't quite space the floor out to three, at least yet, and of course has a ton of defensive limitations in the pick and roll and protecting the rim. And so you say maybe we're going to overpay for one of like the three guys in the league who can block some shots, help protect the rim to make up for his deficiencies and still space the floor on offense. But again, maybe you would say, well, we should either move Vucevic into a bench role or get another center. And then they did get another center. I think just in terms of the value, I don't know who else was out there that they could have spent that 18 million a year on, or maybe 17 million for Biombo, depending on what the incentives are. But I didn't think that was necessarily a bad contract in isolation. And what else were they going to do with their money? But now, of course, they have this logjam at the center position.
Yeah, they do. And that's going to be one of the key questions heading into the season, is what is going to be the ultimate lineup that the Magic roll out once they figure out what's the best pairing. I do like the Biombo signing in the sense that, again, it fills a need for the Magic. Again, the defense just wasn't getting the job done last season, and rim protection continued to be a problem. So I think, again, having another rim protector and Biombo step in there and pairing him next to Ibaka, provides a very rugged, imposing front court defensively. Another number I wanted to toss out there, Biombo's percentage allowed at the rim last year was 45.2%. So that's also another really good indicator that, he's going to be able to help, shore up the Magic defense defensively from, you know, interior wise. The problem there is, you know, certainly he can't do much offensively to help you, aside from getting you garbage buckets. So, you know, if you pair Ibaka with Biombo, you're really relying a lot on Ibaka to provide some of that offensive, you know, production that, you know, a guy like Vucevic can step in and provide next to Ibaka. So it'll be interesting what pairing works the best and which pairing the Magic move forward with, because amongst the three, certainly you got to figure out what you want to do with these guys, because you trade for Ibaka, you sign Biombo to a big contract, you still got an all-star caliber player in Vucevic who's sitting there just wondering what's he going to be doing.
At least he thinks he's an all-star caliber
player. Yeah, certainly. It's just one of those things where they got to figure out that riddle, and that's going to be one of the key storylines heading into the season.
So we talked about some of the new additions already. They also added DJ Augustin to play some backup point guard. Jody Meeks, they took his salary in. Some reports were that he was not going to be ready. He had another procedure on that broken fifth metatarsal in his foot. Now the talk is maybe he could be back by November or so, but basically hasn't played now in a year and a half. And then, of course, Jeff Green as well. What do you think that those guys will be able to bring to this team this year?
Well, for Augustin, you know, I could be completely wrong here, but I kind of looked at that signing as insurance because of, you know, CJ Watson's inability to play last year and fighting through a calf injury that he couldn't really shake off. You know, I think Augustin can come in and certainly...
It's an expensive insurance policy, though, at 4 years, $29
million. Yeah, totally. But at the same time, I think the Magic needed to figure out, you know, who they wanted at the backup point guard position if Watson was going to continue to have issues with his injury. I think Augustin will help. You know, he's a 37.4 career three-point shooter, so I think that helps the Magic from a perspective that they add some shooting to the equation. Augustin does a great job of running the pick and roll, so I think he'll mesh well with Vucevic. And certainly he'll challenge Elfrid Payton a little bit. I'm not sure if, you know, if Elfrid is going to be able to shake him off, because, you know, it remains to be seen how much improvement we'll see from Elfrid this year. I think in some respects he regressed last year, so you just wonder, you know, is he going to continue to be the focal point at point guard for the Magic? And if not, you know, perhaps DJ Augustin steps in to kind of, you know, right the ship a little bit. Jody Meeks is an interesting one. I mean, I like him as a shooter. Again, he's a career 37.3% three-point shooter, but aside from that, he doesn't do too much else, and I'm not sure he's the type of player that can move the needle for the Magic. Certainly, he can come off the bench and get you points, but not much else. As for Jeff Green, I honestly thought that was a completely pointless signing. I think that was a case.
Maybe they can trade him for a first-round pick during the season. That seems to be a joke.
Yeah, they could try. You know, I just thought that was a signing that is going to do absolutely nothing for the roster. I think he's going to create a logjam where Hezonja should get minutes. You know, he's going to create an unnecessary logjam with Aaron Gordon too. So I think you look at that signing and just knowing the type of player that Jeff Green is, that just doesn't help a roster out.
I might have almost rather, and I understand, okay, it was only a year and they do need someone else who, I mean, Green is more of a combo forward, not really that great at either of those positions. I think he's at least, you know, an acceptable rotation player, but I almost would have rather just kept $15 million in cap space. But they didn't, although come to think of it, they didn't really have that option, because with Evan Fournier's small cap hold, that's what they used to sign Green. And so even if they didn't sign Green once, that was kind of just use it or lose it space, essentially. So I guess they figured that that was the best guy that they could get without doing any long-term damage. But I agree with you. I mean, he isn't that good, and he's quite redundant with the other guys that they have, but maybe he'll just be, you know, expensive injury insurance. I think that's probably just what they're looking at it as.
Yeah, certainly could be possible. And even though this isn't a new addition, technically speaking, I think it's an addition that's worth pointing out in the sense that the Magic brought back Fournier, gave him a 5-year, $85 million contract.
Yeah, that's a good deal for sure.
I love that contract. I think Fournier is going to continue to grow as a player.
He would have gotten the max for 4 years on the restricted market. Like, he could have gotten more money over 4 years than they gave him over five.
Absolutely, yeah. So certainly, I think, you know, if there's one of the moves that I liked during the offseason, Hennigan did well in getting Fournier under the books for a reasonable contract, knowing that the NBA salary cap continues to rise astronomically. But I look at that signing as something that's indicative of where the Magic looked at their roster from the backcourt, you know, because again, you give away Oladipo, at that point, the Magic needed needed to bring back Fournier to shore up, you know, a guy that you could bring in to really be that two guard that can really lead the roster. And they're going all in on him. I think that's what the signing really says to the franchise, is that this is the guy that they want to move forward with. And I guess there was some skepticism around whether or not, you know, Oladipo could be that two guard that they could really build around. So certainly a very fascinating approach to the offseason when you look at who they let go and who they, you know, kept around, and also the other guys that they brought in via trade and free agency.
Well, if you are going to have Peyton and you are going to have Aaron Gordon, who now is going to be the starting three, and they're talking about him operating with the ball in his hands a lot more than in previous years, running some pick and rolls, then I understand why, hey, we're going to just have to play Fournier because he can shoot and Oladipo is not. He's come a long way with his shooting, but still probably not really going to be anytime soon a guy who you're really fearing out at the three-point line. So from a fit standpoint, I think it does make a little bit of sense. And Ibaka is one of the better three-point shooting power forwards, certainly among those who can actually play some defense as well. So I do think the pieces fit together a little better than maybe they did in past years. I would feel much better about them if they actually had like a good point guard who could just shoot a little bit and you couldn't go under on every pick and roll and you actually have to guard the three-point line.
Yeah, and that's the position where I'm honestly just having question marks around, and that's why I kind of said earlier that I think Augustine will be an interesting test for Peyton, because, you know, Augustine has obviously certainly proved in this league that he can start, and certainly he's not a guy that you want to start, but if you need to, you can do that.
Yeah, I could see him closing some games when it's just they're just not guarding Elfrid Payton. And I think the defense, especially if you're playing Gordon at the three and Ibaka at the four, you can probably deal with his bad defense because they might just need his shooting on the floor.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you're completely right. You can certainly hide him a bit easier. You know, it's easier to hide a guy defensively than it is to try to find, you know, Payton on the floor, and knowing that his shooting deficiencies can really shrink that floor for you in crunch time. I would rather have a guy that is a little bit porous defensively and you can hide him than a guy that can't shoot at all, and then you figure out you're playing 4 and 5. So I think, you know, again, Peyton is going to be an interesting case this season. I mean, he's got to show a lot, because I was very disappointed in what I saw from him last season. I just didn't think that he made the progress that he needed to make to really show the magic that he's worth the price that they paid for him in the draft a couple years ago. You know, Hennigan, you know, got a lot. Gave up a lot to get Peyton and really put in a lot of eggs in that basket to try to find the point guard of the future for the franchise. And it remains to be seen if Peyton is that guy.
Who do you think are guys who can get better on this team, and how?
Yeah, I think Aaron Gordon by far will get better. He's so young and still learning. And certainly I think Vogel will be a great, you know, thing for him as a coach, because of the fact that, you know, Vogel is an excellent coach and has proven that he can develop, you know, young talent in this league. I think he's one guy that I think will certainly improve when you're looking at his just ability to, you know, shoot the ball. I think he'll exhibit more of that this year. Certainly, as you said earlier, Vogel wants to put the ball on his hands a little bit more, so you'll certainly see some of that playmaking ability from him. Defensively, he'll continue to progress.
You think that's going to work, this whole idea of we're going to put the ball on his hands more?
Remains to be seen. I'm not the type of guy that's just going to rest a judgment on whether or not someone can do or can't do something. It's worth a try. I mean, certainly if you're looking at the talent on that roster, you need guys that can really bring something dynamic to the table offensively. I think when you're looking at Gordon and his skill set, certainly there is a potential for him to do some interesting things. I think it's worth a shot. I think if it's clear that he's unable to take that responsibility, then certainly Vogel can do the best he can to not put as much of a ball handling responsibility on him if he can't prove it. But I do think it's worth a try.
One thing that someone from the Magic was saying to me this summer in talking about the Ibaka trade was that defensively they're much better with Gordon at the three. I think we probably talked about this last year, that we felt like Gordon's better position was the four as kind of a Sean Marion type who could switch. But you do have the issue that, all right, if you're going to put him on the other team's best wing player, now who's guarding their four? You know, are you going to, if you're going to play small in that way, now you need another combo forward type. And they didn't really have anyone like that on the, or they don't even have anyone like that on the roster now. So I think that they can be a lot better defensively. I just have never seen really any indication that he's going to be a guy who's going to run a pick and roll. And not only just due to maybe not having the most amazing ball handling or vision, but also the fact that you can go under on him whenever you want. He hasn't shown that he can shoot off the dribble, or you can switch too. And I'm not sure that I see him as someone who's going to be able to just go one-on-one, shake a guy off the dribble and score if you're going to put your power forward or even a lot of centers in the league on him. So you can definitely color me extremely skeptical. I mean, I think if they're trying to grow and have him grow into that role, he does have a lot of athleticism, a smoothness to his game that maybe he can develop it. But I think this year there are going to be a lot of growing pains, especially when you consider the spacing problems with the rest of the roster. It's not like he's going to have a ton of room to operate.
Yeah, and turnovers is going to be another problem too if you have him handling the ball a lot. And you know, if the Magic are already struggling to score, the last thing they can afford to do is give up the ball. You know, that's another problem that will potentially arise if you give Gordon the responsibility to handle the ball quite a bit in the half court. But we'll see. I mean, it's certainly an interesting idea. I can understand the reasoning behind it and trying to figure out, you know, ways that they can get guys, you know, to progress offensively. Other guys, I think that'll progress. I think Hezonja will get better this year. You know, he definitely did show some strides last season defensively near the end of the year. If there's one of the few things that Skiles did well, I think, was really help Hezonja just understand the nuances of how to play perimeter defense in this league. I definitely saw some improvement near the end of last season from Hezonja in that perspective, and certainly I think Vogel will continue to help him in that regard. You know, Fournier, I really
let's talk a little bit more about Hezonja since you brought him up. I mean, what are your hopes for him in the long term? They drafted him number 5. This was a star-studded rookie class. He didn't really make much of an impact. You mentioned he took some strides on defense, and I know that Mike Schmitz, who had him number 3 on his board coming out, really believed in his defense a lot, but only a 9.4 PR last year, turned it over a fair amount, didn't get to the line at all. That was something that really continued for him from his European stats. Where is he at this point? I mean, can he be a long-term solution potentially at the 3 and Gordon moves to the 4, or is he looking like you think more of like a heat up off the bench type of guy? Is there some bust potential here? Like, what are you thinking about him at this point? Because I have to admit, I didn't watch a ton of him last year because he wasn't playing for a lot of the year too, but didn't really impress me a ton in the Olympics either. I'm not feeling that great about him right now, but I want to get your take since you've been watching more closely.
Sure. I think his floor is a bench scorer, quite simply. A guy that can just come in and get you points when you need it with the second unit. I think his ceiling, you know, there's names thrown around like a J.R. Smith type of player. You know, I think maybe that's a possibility for him. J.R. Smith certainly has proven that he's a valued member of the Cavs roster. I know he's still waiting to get signed or not, but you know, certainly show that he can be a starter on a championship team, which is crazy that is even a possibility. But yeah, I think that's to me, that's Hezonja's ceiling at this point. A guy that can start in this league, that can help you score, that can play defense. But I don't think he's got star potential like everyone expected he was going to have when he was first drafted. Certainly, people were high on him.
What's missing for him not having star potential?
That's another great question.
I don't think he could do anything off the dribble. I think that's good. And yeah, really get to the rim and find people. I mean, I think he just has a long, long way to go in those aspects where he's just, I don't see him being like a good enough one-on-one scorer and quite dynamic enough, even though he's athletic, really like still getting to the rim and finishing, getting to the foul line, being efficient. Like I think that he's going to struggle in those areas to where I don't see him being like someone that you want as one of like your two primary creators on a team.
Playmaking ability is certainly a problem for him. I think he'll continue to just be a gunner a catch and shoot guy that can get you buckets and get hot in a hurry. Certainly he can create off the dribble a little bit. He showed some of that last season, but yeah, there's certainly just a lot of things that he can't do right now that I'm not sure he can ever do. And playmaking is just a big one. Is, you know, his ability to create for others, can he do that? Didn't see anything like that last season. You know, he certainly was very focused on scoring when he had the ball in his hands and didn't do too much to make the team around him better. Was certainly a big point of contention, you know, from Skiles at certain various points in the season last year. So I think you hit the nail on the head. Certainly just his inability to be a playmaker, a dynamic playmaker that can do a variety of things offensively, is certainly going to be holding him back from really developing into a guy that you think can be a star in this league.
Yeah, maybe the hope for him is that, because he does have those quick feet and he's big, that he could just get really good defensively. Maybe that's what the hope is. He doesn't strike me, especially with like kind of the type of ego and the panache that he has, as a guy who's really, you know, thinks that way, is like, all right, the way I got to contribute, it could be years from now before he really gets that mentality, despite the strides that he made to say, all right, this is going to be like one of the primary foci of my game.
Yeah, definitely. And another guy I wanted to bring up real quick, as a someone that likely will get better, and this is certainly just because he had such a bad season last year, is CJ Watson. I think he'll regress back to the mean this season. He had a career worst 8.5 PER last year. Certainly a lot of that had to do with the fact that he was out for much of the year, but he certainly struggled when he was healthy to be able to fit and mesh with you know, the Magic alongside Peyton and others. And even when he was leading the point guard position on the second unit, just, you know, the Magic's expectation when they signed him was for a guy to be able to spread the floor, shoot the ball, provide backup for Peyton, and also play alongside him at various points in the game, but just never could really show that. And so certainly having him reunite with Vogel, certainly I think we'll have an opportunity for him to get back to where he was as a player before you know, his season got derailed last year.
Yeah, Fournier, you could say maybe he could take another step forward on defense, especially under Vogel. That's been something that's been a little lacking. I don't know that Fournier is going to get a ton better offensively. Maybe doing more with the ball in his hands could be something for him, getting a little bit higher of usage. But I mean, a lot of guys on this roster are young enough to improve. I mean, Vucevic was only 25 last year, and Biombo nominally is 23. I just don't see a ton of low-hanging fruit in those guys' games to necessarily improve like some of the other guys we've talked about, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because, you know, I know another question of yours was, you know, going to be, you know, who is likely to get worse. I honestly struggle to think of an answer for that question because there's so much youth still on this roster and guys that are just organically going to improve.
Well, I've got one for you. What about Ibaka?
I could see that, certainly. Yeah. I mean, again, as I pointed out earlier, it's fair to question if he's already peaked as a player, and I would argue that he already has. Especially from a defensive side, you know, he was certainly an elite defender a couple of years ago, but really took some steps back, you know, over the past few seasons on that, you know, side of the ball. Offensively, I think he'll certainly get better in the sense that he's just going to have more opportunities to score, which he didn't
really. I actually disagree with you on that. That's kind of been the party line. But if you think about it, all right, so they got Vucevic out there, right?
Sure.
Aaron Gordon is going to have the ball in his hands. I think that I've always believed that Ibaka could do a little bit more, and I think some of the times when he'll put the ball on the floor can be successful, but I think it's just because they're, and this was the case in Oklahoma City too, they just need someone who can shoot three-pointers. Like, he has to just stand out there by the three-point line because they don't have anyone else who can do it. I believe that he could do more offensively, and especially like if he played some center, which I don't think he's going to have the chance to join his team. Like, I think he could maybe do more. I would have liked to have seen them try that more in Oklahoma City, but like, he's just got to stand at the 3-point line because they don't have anybody else to space the floor. So I actually am pretty skeptical about that, but it sounds like you don't feel that way.
No, I think the skepticism is fair. That's one of those things where I wonder, you know, where does Vucevic fit in the long-term plan? Because I think if you are gambling that Ibaka is going to blossom as an offensive player, then quite frankly, you need to play him at the five to really exhibit that out of him.
Could be their best lineup, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, get Ibaka at the five, Gordon at the four. You know, I think that's an interesting combination from a front court perspective, and bringing Biombo off the bench, I think can do some things for them. But I'm not sure Vucevic is a fit for them, you know, long term. I just question whether or not he's going to be around. And I think, again, whether or not Ibaka improves offensively remains to be seen. I think he has it in him. I think my answer is contingent on whether or not Vucevic will be around, because I think if Vucevic's still around, then certainly, as you pointed out earlier, he's just going to be sitting along the three-point line, spacing the floor, and not doing much more than he did last season with the Thunder. So I would probably put an asterisk around my answer when it comes to his improvement offensively, because I think that comes with some caveats. I think your point earlier about, you know, whether or not he's going to really show more with the current roster as it's currently constructed is a fair skeptical point.
What do you see? I think we've hit on like kind of what some of the playing time lineup issues are, but what would be your preferred crunch time lineup for this team? And do you think that'll be different from what Frank Vogel's preferred crunch time lineup is going to be?
Looking at the crunch time lineup, probably if you want to really get the most out of the current roster, Augustin, Fournier, Gordon, Ibaka, and Bismack Biyombo would be an interesting crunch time lineup. I think, you know, certainly the front court defensively can help to hide some of the warts you would have with a guy like Augustin, you know, just his, you know, inability to play defense. I think that would be an interesting crunch time lineup and something that I would like to see. But again, it's hard to say, because with Vucevic in the fold, it remains to be seen, you know, where he fits into the crunch time lineup for Vogel, because I'm sure, you know, in his mind, he would like to play a combination of Peyton, Fournier, Gordon, Ibaka, and Vucevic, but I'm not sure that will do much for the Magic if you're looking to win games in crunch time. Another possibility you could have is Augustin, or maybe even have Peyton and Augustin in the backcourt. I know that's a little bit tricky because of Augustin's size, and then Gordon, Ibaka, and Bismack. I mean, it's a tricky thing because, again, they don't have the perfect starting five that you can roll out and crunch them and say, hey, this is going to be the lineup that I want. You know, there's going to be still issues no matter what five-man unit you put out there, in my opinion.
Yeah, there are. I think it's going to be very matchup-based, where if you have a great pick-and-roll point guard and you can't hide Augustin anywhere, maybe you're going to have to go with Peyton. And I think if you put in Augustin, then you can get away with more defense with Biyombo. And obviously, hopefully he'll do a better job, Vogel will, of going offense defense than Skiles did. I mean, one thing that I remember was so maddening last year was they would leave Vucevic in for these defense only possessions, especially early on, like, you know, and the other team would just put him in pick and roll and score all these crunch time buckets, you know, for a lot of games that they blew kind of early in the season. I remember one against Washington very early on fell into that category. I think that Oklahoma City classic that they played early in the year as well. So maybe you'll say, all right, you know, we're going to go defense at point guard, and then if we're going to have Alfred on the floor, we got to have the spacing from Vucevic. Or you can say, all right, we got Bismack defending the rim, so now we can get away with Augustin. So maybe there'll be a kind of a platoon system there. And then, of course, there's the lineup we talked about that I would not be shocked could be their best lineup, with Gordon at the four, Ibaka at five. Then you would have Fournier, I guess Hazonia, or maybe even Jeff Green playing at the three, and then whoever you want to have at the one, probably Peyton, to get a little bit more switchiness there with that perimeter group. A lot of that will depend on how well Hazonia develops. But man, I mean, having $30 million worth of centers on the bench in crunch time certainly is probably not going to go over all that well either. So it'll be very interesting to see what they end up doing in the clutch and how that playing time shakes out. I mean, you imagine that Vucevic will probably still start, I think, especially because he seems to think that that's important, and Biyombo is used to a bench role. But who ends up actually playing more out of those two guys, another thing I think it's going to be a crucial question for Vogel to answer.
Yeah, absolutely. And ultimately, if it was me, you know, you really need to have a combination of Gordon, Ibaka, and Biyombo out there if you want to win games. You know, as much as I like Vucevic, you know, he just is not exhibiting the progression on defense that you really would need to see from a guy to warrant him being out there in crunch time. So even if he does start, wouldn't be surprising to see him coming off the, you know, sitting on the bench while Biyombo ends up finishing games, understanding that, you know, Vogel really wants to have the best defensive unit out there. You know, Peyton, Fournier, Hazonia, Gordon, Ibaka would be an interesting crunch time lineup. you know, you get a blend of spacing with a little bit of defense, but you're completely right. I think it's very much going to be a matchup based, you know, crunch time lineup that's going to get rolled out by Vogel, because again, there's just,
yeah, and you know what, I thought of this too. I mean, Vogel, until he had a gun put to his head by Larry Bird last year, he always wanted to play with two bigs. So that's something to consider too. He probably won't consider necessarily Gordon as a big. So I think maybe that Gordon Ibaka lineup won't be something that we see as much of.
Yeah, you're completely right. He certainly likes to rely on two bigs, with Weston Hibbert back in the day as his core front court. So, you know, it probably will be an Ibaka Biombo, you know, front court that ends up getting rolled out there at the end of games with Gordon, you know, rolling in at the three. I just hope to God he doesn't play Jeff Green at all during crunch time, because then that completely defeats the point of having Gordon and Ibaka out there.
What do you see as the big strengths for these guys?
Two in particular. I think the defense will certainly improve dramatically. I think, as I mentioned earlier, rim protection is finally going to be not a sore spot anymore for them. You got two of the best rim protectors in the league now. Certainly that's with the caveat, understanding that Vucevic is still out there and someone that you got to play, but I think the defense will be markedly improved. I know that they've been tossing out a top five defense as their goal for the season. I think that's a bit ambitious, but at the same time, you know, if Vucevic gets let go and you go all in on an Ibaka Bismack front court, certainly could be something that is realistic. Rebounding too, I think, will also be an improvement for them. They weren't that great of a rebounding team last year. You got Bismack coming into the fold now. Last season, he had a 20.8 total rebound percentage, which was top 10 in the league. You know, when you get a guy like Bismack that can get you boards and shore up the weakness of Ibaka from that perspective, because Ibaka isn't much of a rebounder as you would expect. I certainly think rebounding will be a much better area for them as this year in terms of a strength. Those are the two, in my opinion, are
Gordon, it will be an outstanding rebounder from the three position. Yeah. So I think Ibaka is a fine rebounder. I think that just, you know, Kevin Durant got a lot of rebounds. Steven Adams got a lot of rebounds. Ennis Kanter got a ton of rebounds. So I think Ibaka has had better rebounding seasons before. I don't think that he's like bad at that. I think it's just, you know, there are only so many rebounds to go around, but I think they are going to need to kill people on the offensive glass, especially. And Vucevic is a good rebounder too, because they're just going to be missing so many shots, as we will start talking about their weaknesses shortly. I think that's the number one that pops out to me.
Absolutely. Shooting will continue to be a problem for them. You know, you don't need an expert to tell you that if you just look at the roster as the way it's currently constructed. And again, I harped on this point last season, and it's going to be another problem for them this year unless someone like Fournier really improves in this manner, is free throw line. Their inability to get to the free throw line is going to continue to be an Achilles heel for them. And certainly it will be a problem, because again, if they can't shoot and they can't get to the line, how are they going to score? So
yeah, 30th in free throw rate last year and 23rd in 3-point attempt rate last year, which is really ugly.
Yeah, really bad. And the guys that you would expect to get to the line a lot, like Vucevic and Fournier and others, just haven't been able to do it.
Why doesn't he get to the line? Like, he posts up a lot. Like, what is it about his game that he just cannot get to the foul line?
Doesn't invite contact. I think that's the biggest problem for him. You know, when he gets into the post and he does shoot a hook, doesn't create contact to draw a foul. Or when he does get in the post and he goes for a fadeaway jumper, you know, that again, you know, fades him away from contact. You know, if there's one thing that I learned about the Magic over the years as I've, you know, watched this team, is Dwight, when he played for the Magic, always did a great job of drawing contact in the post, you know, being physical, finding ways to get his body into defenders so that it was obvious that he was getting fouled. You know, I'm not seeing any of that from Vucevic, and I think that's been a big reason why he just doesn't get to the line as much as you would like to see. And certainly the fact that he's just more of a perimeter-based center is certainly another reason why he just doesn't get to the line. But certainly just his inability to draw contact is the biggest thing that I see from him that is really holding him back from getting to the line a lot. And again,
because he would be a really good, I think he's decent, but he's still, you know, his true shooting percentages are generally a fair bit below the league average. If he could just get to the foul line, that I think that would change a ton for him. But, you know, at age 26, I don't expect that to really happen. I agree with you. He's just, he's not that's just not part of his game, seeking out contact. Any other weaknesses that come to mind for you?
Not really. I think the two biggest ones are going to be just shooting and getting to the free throw line. And I know that's all around offense being the biggest weakness, but those are the two that really stick out, because again, they're going to be a good defensive team this year. How good remains to be seen, but that offense is really going to hold them back. And if they want to get into, you know, playoff contention, that offense needs to get markedly improved. And I loved your point earlier about offensive rebounding. That's one way to circumvent the fact that they can't shoot or get to the free throw line. If you're going to miss a ton of shots, an easy way to get buckets is by just grabbing them off the glass. And certainly I think that's where Ibaka and Gordon and Bismack and Vucevic can all, you know, help in that regard, is gang rebounding, you know, just attacking the glass aggressively and finding ways to get easy buckets. But again, I think offensively overall, they're just going to have a lot of problems in terms of an overall weakness.
Yeah, I would, in addition to shooting and getting to the foul line, I would add passing and dribbling to their offensive weaknesses as well. Basically every possible offensive skill. I mean, I don't see that there's anyone on this team who really is like a pick and roll maestro. Alfred, you can just go under on him. Augustin can't really finish in the lane. Fournier is okay as maybe like a second or third option, but not someone you want being the main guy. So you've got that issue. And then, you know, who's a great passer on this team? I mean, Vucevic is above average for the center position, but that's probably really the only guy you would say is a good passer on this team as well. And then the offensive coaching, I think you'd have to look at as well. I believe in Vogel. I think he's a great defensive coach, but the offensive execution for his Indiana teams was often really bad, just in terms of their screening, their knowledge of the game. And that was with more veterans. I think they're not going to have a ton of veterans here as well. I mean, you don't see this as being a team that's going to get a ton of buckets on like sweet little plays for back cuts and stuff like that. So I think just this offense, I'm just really, really struggling to see how these guys are going to score. But, you know, I think the defense can be really good with all these guys. All right.
Sorry for interrupting. I was just going to add to your point about Vogel and his time in Indiana not really exhibiting an offensive system that really thrives in the league. You're completely right. If you exclude his 2011-2012 season in Indiana, when they were seventh in offensive efficiency, every other season he was no better than 12th, 20th in offensive efficiency. I mean, certainly his inability to coax out an above average offense in Indiana, aside from that 2011-2012 season, certainly shows that that's going to be a big problem for that roster, or for the Magic's roster this season. And one thing I read recently in terms of an offensive system that they'll likely implement because of the fact that they don't have a lot of pick and roll guys is it's a high-low offensive system, you know, relying on Vucevic's passing ability and other big men to get him in the post, to try to find ways to really have an offensive system built around that. So it'll be interesting what they do in terms of a system offensively, because to your point earlier, the pick and roll maestros aren't exactly littered on this roster. You got a lot of guys that can do some various things, but no system really stands out to me aside from taking advantage of some front court passing from guys like Vucevic.
All right, so best case scenario for these guys, how does it happen, and what do you see as their ceiling this year in terms of regular season wins?
Best case scenario, they make the playoffs, limp in maybe at an 8-7 seed. The way that happens is a top five defense. They get exactly what they, you know, hope to get in terms of the guys that they brought into the table, Ibaka, Biombo, etc. You know, Gordon really shows that he can be an elite defensive three, not saying that he will be, but, you know, again, if that's the best case scenario you're envisioning.
Yeah. Peyton has a lot of potential on the defensive end too. You could look at him too.
Yeah, absolutely. And they just get enough scoring to win games. Again, they're likely not going to top out at, you know, above top 20 offensive efficiency. They didn't last year. They finished 21st. And certainly there's nothing on this roster that indicates to me that they're going to get better than 21st. So, you know, if you're looking at a top 20 offensive efficiency and a top five defense, certainly I think they can make a case to get into the playoffs. You know, in terms of an actual realistic record, I've been noodling on that one. Last year I was dead on with 35-47. So I'm hoping I can be dead on again this year. But I'm looking at 38-44. As a realistic record. I think they'll get a little bit better. I just don't see them, again, making the leap and progression that they need to make to get to the playoffs, unless everything, you know, works out you know, perfectly for them, because again, there's just so many question marks on this roster. You know, can Evan Fournier emerge into a go-to perimeter scorer? Can Ibaka blossom as the main guy? You know, how improved will Hezonja be? Will he get minutes? You know, will Biombo eventually become a starter? You know, can Vogel figure out the offensive puzzle? I mean, there's so many question marks on this roster, and I just find it hard to believe that they're going to figure out answers to every single one of those questions.
Yeah, you know what? I agree with nearly everything that you just said. I think, you know, best case scenario, top five defense, 20th in offense, maybe that gets you to 45 wins. And I think 38 and 44 would be my prediction as well. I took the over, I think, on their 36 and a half from last year. I just think that Vogel, this defensive talent, I think they're just going to be an outstanding defense and really difficult to score against. And they're going to just, you know, win games 90 to 85 a lot of times. What about the worst case scenario? I mean, what's the floor for these guys?
Back to the lottery, which has been a very familiar place for them. Nothing works, I think, is the worst case scenario. You know, whether that's injuries, whether that's just guys not fitting in the right, you know, just bad fits, whether that's, you know, just Vogel's inability to coax out an elite defense, you know, and also certainly, you know, their inability to get any scoring whatsoever. It could easily be another lottery season for them. I mean, again, they're banking a lot on this defense really becoming a strength of the roster. And certainly that's been Hennigan's goal since day one when he got brought on as the GM, is to build an elite defense, and he hasn't been able to do it. And I know that this is going to be a major test for this roster to be able to fit that vision of his. We'll see what happens, but certainly it could be very well possible that they get another top 10 pick in the draft. And if that happens, I don't know if Hennigan's going to have a job.
Yeah. What do you think, just in terms of wins, is like the kind of worst case scenario? I mean, outside of just catastrophic injury luck.
Yeah. If they don't hit at least 35 wins, I think Hennigan's gone. I really do think that he's going to, you know, be on the hot seat, because he's had plenty of time to rebuild this roster. And when you look at the micro moves, I really do like a lot of the micro moves. But when you look at the macro fit, it just hasn't coalesced into a roster that you look at and say, hey, that's going to be a winning roster. Just hasn't happened yet. And he's had number of seasons to really figure to fit out, and he just hasn't been able to do it. And just knowing the dynamics of Valance Martins and the front office, and just knowing that they're looking to win and get off the snide of being a losing team. Again, if they just don't show any progress whatsoever, Hennigan's gone. I can almost guarantee you that, because he's had plenty of time to rebuild his franchise. And
well those summer moves, I think, just are a good predictor of that, right? Like, you don't make the moves that you make this summer if you feel particularly secure about your long-term employment prospects.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every move that he's made pretty much since the Harris trade has been win-now moves. Moves designed to accelerate the rebuilding process, moves to try to bring in talent, veteran guys that can play, that can win, or at least know how to win. You know, those are the moves that of a sign of a guy that knows that his job is on the line if this team doesn't make the progress that a lot of the fan base has been expecting to see the past couple years. Certainly that's how I view it, because again, I think he's had plenty of time to rebuild this franchise. And although I like a lot of the moves that he's made, he's missed a lot of moves also. You know, when you look at guys like Harkless, when you look at guys like Nicholson, you know, I understand that these aren't guys.
If they had Harkless on the team, that would be great. Like, they could really use a combo for it. I think he would actually, if they had given him a shot, and especially because they traded Harris away, right? Like, Harkless could have actually played. Maybe they could have kept him. He's on a good contract now. What they did to him, it just didn't really make much sense to me. And he would actually be a great fit next to Aaron Gordon to me, potentially. I mean, neither of them can shoot yet, but you know, they might get there. And just defensively, I think they could be good. So yeah, I share your concerns about their long-term vision, and I think you may be right about that with Hennigan's future. To follow up real quick, I think I could see them getting down to 28-29 wins if they, I mean, this offense could be last in the league. Do you agree with me on that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, this is an offense that could very well struggle to score.
And if Fournier gets injured, they're really in deep shit too.
Absolutely, yeah, because they're putting all their eggs in the basket of Fournier and Ibaka and Vucevic to get them points. If Fournier can't develop into the two guard that can really get you buckets like Oladipo did last season, because again, last season they had the benefit of having Oladipo and Fournier to get you points in the backcourt. With Oladipo gone, all of that responsibility falls onto Fournier. And it's, you know, you got guys like Hozonia that are a complete wild card. Another guy in Gordon that's still trying to find himself offensively. That's just a lot of pressure to put on Fournier to be able to say, hey, listen, I need you to get me, you know, buckets. And again, you know, with Ibaka and Vucevic, aside from those two guys, they don't got much else in terms of front court scoring. I mean, again, they could struggle to score 80 a night sometimes. It's just going to be really bad if those guys don't figure it out.
Yeah, they probably aren't going to play necessarily at the fastest pace either. I don't necessarily trust these guys to get out and transition and beat the defense on the floor to take care of their spacing issues. And yeah, I mean, so if they're the last in offense and maybe they're, you know, only 10th or 11th in defense, I don't know that I could see them being much worse than that unless there's a catastrophic injury. But, you know, that's a 29 win team or so, probably a 28 win team. So yeah, pretty big variance for these guys. You know, I think just depending, and it's all going to be, all right, can the offense be even like remotely passable as an NBA offense? And can the defense be just crazy elite? I mean, you know, this could be like the number three defense, the number two defense even in the league this year if everything breaks right. So that's why I see such a large range for them.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think there's a lot of variance in what this team can do this year. It could go bad, it could go good, it could go great. And great being just getting to the playoffs. I think, again, that's certainly going to be the goal of the team this season. They're putting all their hopes on the fact that they can get back to being a running team, because certainly it's been a long road back from the Dwight era.
So we talked about a grade last year, so I won't make you rehash that. But one question I did want to ask you, I've been asking a lot of the team experts this. You were a Magic fan for quite some time. If you had to buy an authentic jersey of one player, you know, spend $200 or whatever of one player on the current team, who would it be?
Penny Hardaway, and it would need to be
current team.
Oh, current team. I'm sorry.
Yeah, definitely Penny Hardaway. Because Shaq left, and Penny also was just kind of cooler, had a cooler game than Shaq.
Yeah, totally absolutely. From the current roster, go ahead and give me Hozonia. I know there's still loyalists out there that hope to see him become a stud. And
my co-host, Danny LaRue, co-founder, or maybe just founder, as he sees it, as the Church of Hozonia. I'm not sure how inclusive that religion is, but he fancies himself the founder of that.
Certainly, and I'm a member still. I think he's still got potential to be a player in this league. I would probably go all in on him because I'm not sure I would want to do a Fournier jersey, because then you want people Googling, who's that? And then you get into trouble.
Yeah, I will tell you, I mean, I know that there's this thing about, like, don't Google him. I've actually adhered to that and not Googled him, so I don't actually know what it is. And this is probably not the podcast to discuss what it actually is. But for me, it would be Aaron Gordon. I mean, he won the dunk contest. Double Zero is an awesome jersey. He's probably the best player, at least young player on the team. Like, I think I would go with him. I really enjoy his game a lot. So are you doing any writing or anything these days, or are you just sort of passive observer who comes on podcasts every once in a while?
Passive observer who comes on podcasts. I like
that.
Yeah,
all right. So nothing to plug then, in other words.
Nothing to plug, but I still will be very active on Twitter. Certainly will share my analysis and thoughts throughout the season. If there's the right opportunity for me to hop on an outlet and, you know, provide some analysis on the roster, certainly we'll explore those opportunities. But taking a step back, certainly there's other great writers out there, and definitely recommend, you know, people at Orlando Magic Daily or Orlando Pinstripe Post as websites that you can follow for Magic analysis, along with the Sentinel. I know Josh Robbins does an excellent job of covering that roster, and John Denton at Magic.com. So not lacking for analysis if you need it, but certainly I'll try to do what I can to provide my own unique perspective.
All right. And it's ERivera7. That's your Twitter handle, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, you can follow me on Twitter at NateDuncanNBA. I'm actually going to be starting to live tweet some games now that we're into the preseason, and of course during the regular season as well. Thanks again to everyone who leaves us an iTunes review or rating. That really helps support the show as well. And those who patronize our sponsors, we really appreciate that also. So thanks again to Eddie for coming on, and we'll be back shortly with another season outlook. Till then. So if you'd like to manage your money a bit more like the Hawks or the Warriors, and perhaps less like some of the less frugal teams that we've seen, you should consider Betterment. Betterment is a great way to go. You can learn more about them at betterment.com/capspace. They are the largest independent automated investing service out there. One of the great products they have is Smart Deposit. If you're someone who has a variable income, what it can do is take money out of your account once you get above a certain preset limit. So if you feel like you need to have $5,000 in your account just to be safe, anytime your balance goes above $5,000, you can set it so that it'll invest that money for you automatically. That's just one of the smart services that they have. And Betterment is at a lower cost than more traditional financial services. More than 150,000 customers choose Betterment's advanced advice algorithms and beautiful user interface to manage over $4 billion of their dollars. Again, you can get started with them and in saving for your retirement or other financial goals with 6 months of no fees at betterment.com/capspace. That's betterment.com/capspace. Betterment, investing made better.